We're back here with our poets once again, Clarence Major and Patricia Spears Jones, and we have some questions for them.
And you assume we can answer them.
Hi, thank you guys so much. Really great readings. I just had a question for both of you in terms of your process. You both have very distinctive voices when you read, and I was just wondering, when you begin a piece, do you vocalize it as well, or what's that process like for you?
I read things after I write something, but I don't do it well. Clarence, sound is extremely important to me. So there's a lot of, long and short vowels and things like that in the work. I come out of the New York scene where, you cannot survive if you cannot present your work in front of people. At a certain point, you really do have to be able to present it and present it well. But I will tell you that my very first public reading at the Poetry Project way back in the day, people had to yell at me because I was speaking so softly.
Writing, I always sound out the lines to make sure they have the right cadence and the rhythm. Mm-hmm. I speak them out loud to myself. Sometimes I record them and play them back to hear what it sounds like, because when you hear yourself speaking, it's not the same as listening to your voice on a recording. It's a very different experience. Mm-hmm. Because you're hearing inside your head. So I try to make sure that I have the right kind of cadence and rhythm that I want. And so if the line doesn't sound right, doesn't sound rhythmic, lyrical, I get rid of it or I revise it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you.
Good question.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. One of the things Steve asked us to do before the reading was to look at the covers of different books, your books and also the books of a couple of poets who are going to be reading them this weekend, and look at the fronts of them and see if we can guess from the art and the title something about your poems. And I was just wondering, how much say do you have over the covers of your books, and do they please you?
Well, most of my covers are based from paintings, my own paintings. Huh? Yeah, they have been for a number of years now. Hmm. And publishers just, know that I paint, and they just say, well, it saves them money. Because they don't have to pay me.
So do you get to choose the painting that goes on?
Well, what I do is I send them images, maybe a dozen images, and they select the one they want. Because they have, they always want to be in control, But yeah, but it gives me a chance to also. I wouldn't send them anything that I wouldn't want on the cover of the book, so I make sure I send them only what I would be happy with, because I have no. I'm not going to select it. You see, they're going to select it. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I send only 5 images.
Yeah.
To make sure I'm going to be happy with it. Like the cover on the big book over there, that's a landscape. That one, that came out pretty good. I sent about 5 images, not all landscapes actually, some figures, and that's the one they chose. Hmm. Same with this one.
Yeah.
This was from a painting. That's not the whole painting.
That's a detail.
That's just a detail from the painting.
I always choose my covers, and I always have the work of living African-American artists on my covers. So the first, they don't have all my books here, but The Way That Kills has a sculpture by Willie Birch. Femme du Monde has a photograph by Carrie Mae Weems. Painkiller has a sort of wall piece by Carl Hazelwood. And Lucent Fire is details from a collage by Sandra Payne. I've known Sandra Payne's work for as long as we've been in New York, since back from the Just Above Midtown days when it was on Franklin Street. And I've always wanted to have one of her pieces on the cover, and I wanted it actually for Painkiller, but the visual I sent, the designer just couldn't deal with it. So Sandra got very sick while this book was finishing up, and I hate to say it, but I did some serious praying that she would stay alive and get that cover. You know, poets are so ruthless. But I am so grateful because it's so beautiful. And the other thing that's really interesting to me about if you choose a really strong image, then the designer, like the covers for Femme du Monde and Painkiller are both designs by Jane Brunette. She did them for Tia Chucha. And she picked up the colors from the Carrie Mae Weems photograph and from the drawing, and then used those to then build her design throughout. And I think for Lucent Fire, I think this is one of the best covers that the White Pine Press has ever had. I mean, I think they were sort of surprised, but I was like, I just said, Sandra's going to do the cover. I don't care how we get it, what we have to do to get it, but that's going to happen. And I'm totally pleased. Yeah.
I couldn't help but notice that both of you talked a lot about art, and specifically, I loved how you referenced Duchamp a lot, and specifically Nude Descending a Staircase. And I was wondering how art affects your poetry, and then how do you kind of know when you are, is there something that you look for in a specific art piece that when it, like it presents itself or jumps out at you, you know, like, oh, that makes sense because I've looked at other pieces and I get this reaction from similar aspects of art, or do you know when, I guess I'm still phrasing the question in my head, so sorry. But
okay.
How do you know when a piece of art kind of speaks to you and makes you want to write a piece of poetry?
Yeah, well, I hopefully never write a poem about a painting. What I do is use the painting sometime as a starting point, as a jumping off point, like, you know, as a point of departure, let's say. And Duchamp, Nude Descending a Staircase, that poem, it's kind of a homage to Duchamp, but not really. I mean, it's in two parts. So I might start with a painting, but I always end up way away from the painting, as in that poem. You know, I don't want to write a poem about a painting. I don't think I ever have. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
I just take it somewhere else where it belongs. I mean, the painting might gives me a place to start. That's all. It becomes a kind of motif.
And I've wondered similar things. Of do you stay within the world of the painting, or do you like bring it out into something?
No. Oh God, I hate those poems.
No.
There's a whole group of people who just after you've read the everybody who's ever done, you've been on panels or something, and you read like the 15th poem about Monet's like water. You just were there pebbles underneath your feet? Did something else happen? I mean, it's like you just want to let people let it go. When I write about art or write in response to art, I'm in conversation with the artist, and the artist, like in the Fringe of Town, has been dead for several centuries. So one of the great things about being a writer, especially being a poet, is that you really can have conversations with the dead. You can enter ghost country. You can, and there are images and sounds and fabrics, because the other thing about art is that it's not just about the visual, and I think that's one of the problems that I have with a lot of people, just sort of, they're stuck writing about the painting or writing about, it's like, ugh, sorry. I apologize to all my friends who write these poems, but they don't hold me. Yeah. Yes?
I noticed that both of you, or it seemed to me anyway, that both of you put a lot of thought into what you're going to read this afternoon and the order of the poems and how they formed a suite in a way. And what kinds of things do you think about when you're thinking about a reading and how to put together a reading?
Goodness. It's so, I don't know. I just, sometimes I don't like my poems. And I mean, there are times a particular poem I might like, and I'm pretty impulsive about it, about selecting. If I like the poem at this particular time, it's a subjective process, really, for me. I just say, well, I like this one, and I'll just randomly select poems. Like the selection today is like from a pretty wide period of time. Some of them, none going back to the 70s or even the 80s. All of these are newer poems from the 90s on to the present. So I tend to have a bit of a problem with poems I wrote a long, long time ago. sometimes I think, oh God, I wish I hadn't published that, But I guess everybody goes through that, I would assume. I can think of only a couple of poets who never wrote a bad poem.
Names?
Well. On second thought, I can't think of a poem who never wrote a bad poem. But anyway, I think there are some poems you tolerate, over time, because you wrote it 20, 30 years ago, and then you think, oh God. There's a good article in the New York Review of Books last week about this subject of revising poems written earlier. Mm-hmm. And she talks about Helen Bendler. What's her name? Is it Helen Bendler?
Yeah, somebody I haven't read in 1,000 years. But
yeah, she has this really interesting article about Emily Dickinson's tendency to revise her work over and over and over. And I know that Whitman constantly revised after publication. The point that she's making in that article is that some poets believe that once a poem is published, it should not be revised because that's written in stone, so to speak. But then there's a group of poets who believe the opposite, you know, that publication is not a cutoff point, really, for that group of poets. And I happen to be in that group of poets. I don't believe that publication is a cutoff point. I tend to revise poems not heavily so that they're not recognized, because at a certain point, if you go too far, it's going to be a different poem, right? It's going to be a different poem. But if you make it a little bit better than you were able to do 30 years ago, then it, you know, it might, it's still really this basically the same poem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the, I don't know if that answers your question, but yeah.
Well, I just try to wing it. not really, but no, I knew today I wanted to read some new poems because I've been reading almost exclusively from the New and Selected, and I'm grateful for that there's a number of poems in the New and Selected that are fairly recent, that you know, written between, say, 2010, 2011, and 2013, 14. But I've been writing all these other things, and one of the poems I was going to read, and I thought, oh, no, I'm not going to read that today because I don't feel like there's too much noise in the air, and I didn't feel like reading a really noisy poem. But it's going to be in an anthology called Resisting Arrest, and it's called Look Back in Hatred. So you get a sense of why today, enough already. There's enough noise in the world. But I wanted to give a sense of going, of sort of speaking, because literally when I was here before, I read the San Francisco Spring 1986 poem, and I just wanted to kind of remind people that we always are writing about nature in different kinds of ways, and about environment, and about destruction in that way. But I also wanted to think a little bit more about the sense of needing, you know, we often talk about needing light in this world, but sometimes we need shadow. And I realize as I get older, I can understand the need for shadow and for darkness and for going in. And so I wanted to have some of those poems in this mix along with the ones that kind of bring us into light. And that's kind of what I want. And I wanted to end with my kind of mini self-portrait, you know, in the fringe of town, because that's what that is, in a way. So I think that worked.
I'm out of time, but thank you very much.